Mick, I have to ask, when is the last time you actually spoke with your pharmacist? Like, really talk to them?
Honestly, mine's on speed dial. I call her all the time. She may have even blocked me at this point. I call all the time for dosing questions, side effects, whether something is worth bringing to my doctor. this woman has saved me from so many unnecessary doctor's appointments.
Okay, that's amazing. And you're obviously, we all know this, but way smarter than me.
Shut up.
I treat my pharmacist for me is the person I smile at as I pick up the prescription.
Hey, that's a missed opportunity, babe. Which is one of the reasons I wanted to get a pharmacist on the podcast. It takes a village to get through perimenopause. And I think that pharmacists are probably one of the most underutilized tools for most people's healthcare team or their toolkit, especially right now when getting a doctor's appointment can be near impossible.
Yeah, well, it certainly feels that way.
Yeah. So in this episode, pharmacist Jennifer Bruce is sharing what a pharmacist with prescribing authority can do. Things like health screenings, vaccines, they can prescribe for minor infections, even UTIs, so you don't need to see your doctor.
Amazing.
And they can even help navigate menopausal hormone therapy.
Well, yes, which is awesome. And we also learn a little bit about Jennifer's new venture, Sugar Track Consulting, which is helping women manage their metabolic health. And that's how I recently reconnected with Jennifer. So,
Well, if you've ever struggled to get a doctor's appointment, wondered who to call with a quick health question, or you just want to boost your healthcare team, this one's for you.
After all, this is perimenopause, and some days we need all the help we can get. Let's get into it. And now, a word from our partners.
Hi there, Vulva speaking. We need to talk. For years now, you've been calling me the wrong name. I'm the vulva, not the vagina. I'm all the external bits you can see. My neighbor, the vagina, she's the internal tunnel connecting me to your uterus. You know, the baby highway. Different parts, different names. It's pretty hard to address dry, uncomfortable situations when you don't even know which one of us needs the attention. Now that we're properly introduced, can you please hook me up with Samiris? Their water-based moisturizer and lube are exactly what I need. No irritating fragrances, just clean ingredients to keep me happy and well hydrated, not dry and disgruntled. Eternally grateful for the hydration and finally getting my name right. Signing off, XOXO, your vulva.
And now that you've been properly introduced, do your girls a favor and use code TIP20 for 20% off at lovemyiris.com. That's TIP20 at lovemyiris.com. Jennifer, welcome to This is Perimenopause. We're so excited to have you here today.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to tell you all the great things about pharmacists.
Yay. Well, yay. You know what? Because it's really interesting. Mikkel, years ago when we started This is Perimenopause, wrote an article about having a pharmacist as part of your perimenopause toolkit. And I think that it's always been top of mind that we wanted to have a pharmacist on the podcast. And lucky you're in the hot seat today. So lucky you. We chose you.
I will try to represent my profession
I'm sure,
in the best light possible.
Mikkel has more experience with a pharmacist than I do, but it's a huge tool and a huge asset that I don't think many women understand. Unless you really need support with your medication and you're on a lot of medications, you probably don't really know that this little gem is out there. So let's dive in. And
very underutilized, because until you get sick and you don't go into the pharmacy all the time, you don't realize everything. How your pharmacist can help you. Really, people don't usually present until they're older, when they all of a sudden there's a lot of medical conditions are coming up. And so when they have to come see their pharmacist, like, oh, I didn't know this happened. But it's trying to get people like your age who, you know, things are starting to happen, but maybe you don't have like a real underlying, like a real medical condition that needs active treatment. You just don't know what we do.
No. And it's funny because it's so difficult to get into the doctor, not for everyone, but often it's very difficult to get into the doctors. Mm-hmm. And my understanding is that there's a lot of things other than just filling prescriptions that your pharmacist can do. And so I'd be really interested. Can you tell us about some of the health checks or screenings or quick tests, some of the health things that people can come to the pharmacist for?
Sure. I think first, though, I want to start with like the umbrella of what a pharmacist can do. Please, yeah, so like please. Your pharmacist is like the best thing about a pharmacist, a community pharmacist, which is what I am. We work in, you know, stores and retail settings, is that we're accessible almost, I mean, really in this day and age, 24 hours a day. You can get a pharmacist 24 hours a day, but we're very accessible. You can just come and see you. And I think that one of the best things someone can do for their health to start with is to realize a pharmacist is part of the healthcare team, and to actually find a pharmacist you like, find a pharmacist who you respect, find a pharmacist that you can build a relationship with, just like you do your doctor. Mm-hmm. You see your doctor, you build a relationship. The doctor knows who you are. They learn other things about you than just maybe your health conditions, like what your family situation is or what your stressors are in life or what trip you just went on. And all of that is part of a whole person's life. It's not just your medical condition or just your drugs that the pharmacist is interested in. So once you develop that relationship with a pharmacist, they become a member of your healthcare team that has some real information to provide you and knows something about you also. So what are some of the health checks things that we do? Well, one big one, pharmacists should be screening for your vaccines, flu season now, or if you are interested in COVID, you know, we can make sure you can get your immunizations. The big thing in middle age is shingles vaccine.
I was just going to say, I just heard about this. I need to get this, right?
You haven't had this, Michelle?
No. Yes.
Shingles vaccine is like, you know, if we're talking about people in perimenopause at 40 or 40s, 50s, you need your shingles vaccine starting at 50. It's recommended to get your shingles vaccine.
And is it one dose? Is it two doses?
Two doses. It costs some money for sure, unless you have private insurance. If you don't have private insurance, it costs probably about, I think they're about $200 a shot. You need two of them. I have this funny thing that if you ever get shingles, you'll give me $400 so fast to take it away.
It should seem like a deal.
And even if I've had the chicken pox as a kid, I still need to get my shingles vaccine?
Yes, chicken pox goes dormant and it comes back as we're older when it comes back as shingles. And you have to have had chicken pox to get shingles. Okay, so our kids who we vaccinated against chicken pox probably will never get shingles because they've never had chicken pox. But you can only get shingles if you've had chicken pox. So we need to vaccinate those of us who all had chicken pox so that we do not get shingles.
Oh, okay. Now I got it.
Okay.
But I need to come. I'll see you next week.
And just a hot tip, if I may, it's not universal, but it can knock you on your butt.
Oh.
And I have never had body aches like I did after both doses. It wasn't dire or anything. Just, you know, you might not want to do it right before you have a big weekend planned or something.
Not during ski season.
Yeah.
It's very individual. Like my husband the same day and I was fine and he was knocked out the next day. Yeah. It just depends how you do it. Okay. You always get a really sore arm with a shingles vaccine.
Okay.
Much like in a shot. I don't know. It just seems to hurt your arm where the needle goes in.
Another quick tidbit. When I got my first dose, my husband got shingles.
That's the universe.
It's the universe and not fun.
Like, no fun.
Within like moment? Like not moment.
Oh,
like,
no.
like
I didn't cause him the vaccine. Let's be clear. No. Just, coincidence, funny. My point just being that what I went through from the side effects of the vaccine for 24 hours were absolutely nothing compared to what he experienced getting shingles.
And if I've had shingles, can I get the vaccine? Or is there any point to getting the vaccine?
You need to wait a year.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, we totally digress there. But
this is really important because... this is really important, right? Ladies, for your toolkit, don't get shingles.
The problem is, maybe we should just to round out the conversation. Why you don't want shingles is because it's really terrible at the time, is that you get this rash and it can feel like burning and electricity and it can be really itchy and very, very, very painful. That's fine. The problem is sometimes you get damage to your nerve from the shingles and that the rash will resolve and you will have the pain for the rest of your life. That's what we want to prevent. Mm. Not that we, you know, too bad you have 2 weeks of having terrible shingles. It's that there can be long-term consequences of this and we can never get the pain to go away. And that nerve is damaged forever.
Oh my God. And if you get it on your head, is there something like about
more your eye? If you get it on your nerve that comes across your eye, it can be really dangerous because you could lose your sight from that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Shingle vaccines, ladies.
Okay. Yeah. Top shingle of the vaccine. To-do.
Ski season aside, I'm coming in next week. I don't care. Thank you. Like, what are the kind of, for instance, my husband was had a really significant sty.
Yeah.
And he went to the eye doctor and they were like, no, just keep putting this warm compress and whatever. And then 2 weeks later, it was still swollen. And he's like, I'm not going back to the eye doctor. Forget that. So I happened to call a pharmacist and I was like, yeah. Hey, can I? And he prescribed an antibiotic. So what are the kind of things like that can people come in for?
I mean, we live in Ontario. And so every pharmacist has different laws in each province. So pharmacists in Alberta can do different things than pharmacists in Ontario can do. In Ontario, we have this minor ailment. And I think there's like 13 minor ailments that we can prescribe for. Eye infections would be one of them. Lyme disease prevention is another. Thrush in your mouth. The most common one I do is urinary tract infections, for sure. That's the most common thing. And cold sores. Okay. Getting cold sores. Those are kind of the, there's a
And
whole
you can
list.
Prescribe an antibiotic for a UTI?
Yes, we
oh,
can.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Save a lot of women a lot of.
It does. Because we're very accessible and you don't have to wait for your doctor. And you can call a pharmacist 24 hours a day. So in Ontario, you can do that. I'm sure in Alberta, you can do that. Alberta pharmacists have a lot more prescribing rights than any other pharmacist in the country. They can start medicine and change medicine. They have a lot more.
Which is really handy. And maybe this is a good segue into the next sort of question about menopausal hormone therapy and what, you know, you can and can't do. So I've been trying to figure out if I need to increase my dose of Estradot, which is one of the patches, for example, right? And in Alberta, I can do that with my pharmacist, right?
That's
right. We can titrate back and forth and, you know, at some point I do need to check in with my nurse practitioner again, but my pharmacist. So it's really helpful in that context in terms of saving time. But also, I don't know that I would be doing this if I had to go in to see my nurse practitioner every time.
Right.
Anyway, maybe you could tell us a little bit about that and what you can do as a pharmacist in Ontario in terms of, you know, hormone related things.
So pharmacists in Ontario cannot prescribe hormone therapy. And I can't change your dose either without your doctor's permission.
Right.
What can a pharmacist do in Ontario to help with your hormone therapy? Well, I think that the pharmacist's job is to take complex information and explain it in a way to the patient in front of me that they can understand this information. So that information may be what type of estrogen is available. There's a gel form and there's a patch and there's tablets and there's ones that come combined with progesterone and there's separate progesterones. A pharmacist could be your resource of this is what's available. And maybe if you're already on the patch and you're having side effects or something, we go over, okay, maybe this isn't working for you. Okay, so very common thing would be the patch is working great. You're getting all the benefits of the hormone therapy, but every time you put that patch on, you have an itchy, itchy, terrible spot because you are having a reaction to the adhesive. Mm. And this is not drug thing, but this is something that really does affect people's lives because then you don't want to use this patch because it's very itchy and uncomfortable and you're wearing it for the next 10 years. That would be an example of something that a pharmacist could help you solve, either by moving you to a gel that goes on, or maybe you want to take the tablets, or, you know, we have a way of preventing the allergic reaction.
Like doing like
the trick is to put a corticosteroid inhaler you use for asthma, you spray it on your skin and then you put the patch on and that will stop the allergic reaction.
Serious?
That is something your pharmacist can help you with. And I will tell you, not many doctors know this, but all pharmacists know that. There you
That's go. Interesting. And is it the blue puffer or the purple? Like, does it matter? I've got all kinds of puffers in my house.
Orange puffer.
Orange puffer. Orange puffer. Okay. We've got some
it
of those.
To be a steroid puffer.
Interesting.
I think that's sort of the strength of the Ontario pharmacist is to be that resource that can help you understand maybe what you need to know or what you want to know. So when you go back to your doctor and say, well, this is what is happening, you have the words and you have the knowledge that you can have a good conversation with the doctor to say, this is what's going on. So your pharmacist can provide you with that knowledge or suggestions. It could be as specific as you're coming in and I say to you, Mikhail, I think you need to go up, and I would go up to a 75 microgram patch. That's what I would do. Or I'm going to say, you know what? I think maybe you actually need more progesterone. So why don't you talk to your doctor about that and go in with a list of suggestions to talk to your doctor
right.
about.
Or maybe this is your third UTI in however long. Maybe you need some vaginal estrogen.
That's right. That's my passion. Vaginal estrogen.
Right?
That's my passion.
Last week at work, I gave 4 people in their 70s antibiotics for a UTI in under 8 hours and called every single doctor and wrote a note saying they should be put on vaginal estrogen.
Good
None
for you.
None of those women are on vaginal estrogen. This is my little pet project, is to get everyone who is in menopause on vaginal estrogen in order to prevent UTI, so I stop seeing these 70-year-old women who are on their 4th UTI of the year and they're miserable. Be on vaginal estrogen to prevent that from happening. And I think it is a huge missed opportunity.
It's interesting. We had a nurse practitioner on in the fall and we were talking about this. And my mother was one of those people that had recurring UTI, like always, always, always. And I mean, it was 20 years ago. No one knew, but, or maybe they did know. I don't know. Anyway, yes. So someone comes in and they keep presenting with these UTIs. So you then reach out to the doctor and
I either reach out to the doctor if that's what they want me to do. Some people don't like that. So I write a little note to give them that they can take it to their doctor so that they know the name and why. I just write a little note saying, ask your doctor about this. This is really important.
And are any of these women aware of the black box warning? And is that?
No. I'm going to tell you, these people are between 70 and 75 and they're just desperate to not have bladder infection.
Fair.
Like they're so sick of it. So when I say I think this could help, they're just, okay, I want to do this because it can help. You got a bladder infection, we got to fix it. So let's get some cultures and sensitivities. Let's get you on the right antibiotic. Let's follow up in a week. Is it gone? Perfect. Then it happens again. And no one, that would be the role of the pharmacist to look, oh my goodness, we're missing something here. We can get them on vaginal estrogen and prevent this. It's just sort of a bigger picture look and trying to look at everyone's whole medication history and what's going on.
And do you, beyond the whole medication, do you ever counsel on, you know, maybe lifestyle changes, or I guess you would also counsel on over-the-counter options, or as you mentioned, dealing with side effects, like that's a great tip, the reaction to the adhesive.
I mean, that's
like
an easy side effect.
Are there other things like that?
Talking about like menopause hormone therapy, there's a lot of things that go with that. If someone's in menopause and they're on hormone therapy, then we want to know, are they sleeping? We want to know what their iron levels are. We want to know what supplements they're interested in taking, what we think they should be taking. And so I think that's all something that you can go to your pharmacist about. Even just the iron thing, again, goes back to a simple thing. People have low iron in menopause. Lots of times they're being told to take iron supplements. Your pharmacist is a great resource of making sure you're on one that works for you, or maybe you are taking the one the doctor told you to take and you can't take it because you have constipation and upset stomach and you just can't face looking at that bottle because it's already making you sick. You can come to your pharmacist and say, okay, what can we do about this? And we can say, let's lower the dose of iron and start real slow, like just slow things down. And you just have this person, especially if it's your pharmacist who you have a relationship with, who is sort of coaching and guiding you and making sure you're on the right step and making a plan for you that's going to work, right? And you're not just floundering, like, I can't take the iron, I just get sick. End of story.
End of story, stop.
Yeah, right? And that, if we don't fix your iron, it doesn't matter how much hormone replacement therapy we give you, you're still going to feel terrible. Right?
I think that's important too, you know, because I know a lot of people, since Michelle and I've been doing this, will say to me, what am I taking this for? And when should I be taking it in terms of hormone therapy? And I think there's also something that gets missed, which is like the timing of when you take certain medications becomes really important, especially for things like progesterone, that you want to get the benefit of being sleepy if it's going to make you sleepy. So take it at night. And like there's all of these things that I think when you know, you take for granted, and not everybody does. And so a pharmacist is a really good tool, person to help guide you, and you can call up and easily ask questions of.
Yeah. And I guess we haven't really focused on all the drug things the pharmacist can do. They can do lots of drug things, but your question was sort of what else can we do? Mm-hmm. There's the other things. But then there's other things like menopause and sleep. This is, you know, I mean, sleep's a problem in anything, but menopause and sleep is terrible. It's just that your pharmacist can say, listen, have you gone to this program out of Dalhousie called My Sleepwise? I do handouts on sleep just to help people with sleep hygiene, like going through their sleep hygiene. Tell me about your sleep. And sometimes there's just a little thing they're doing wrong, like, you know, being on their screen for the hour before bed. It seems like common sense, but sometimes people just need to be told by someone who, one, isn't their husband, isn't their wife, isn't their mother.
Yeah. I think, too, one of our favorite doctors will be on the podcast again very shortly. And what we talked about is the fact that in perimenopause in particular, you know, sleep is often, there's a recognition of that sleep is often the first thing to mm-hmm. be affected or impacted. And it's very challenging to figure out what's going on. But also, there are a lot of different things that can be going on. And there are different types of medications or solutions, right? So mm-hmm. you would also have a great insight into that, that I think a lot of medical providers don't necessarily. Right? Because if you're waking up at 2 a.m. wired versus you can't fall asleep, like that's, those are two different right. things that yeah. you address differently. Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. and you're not my pharmacist, but I started on Davigo. So I was prescribed it for sleep.
Yes.
I happened to be talking to you and I said, like, it's actually not working. I go to bed fine, but I'm waking up in the middle of the night still. And you were like, oh, well, why don't you try taking a half a pill if it's before midnight or one or two? Try taking a half a pill and go back to bed. And it's been a game changer.
It worked.
Yeah, it totally worked. So even last night, I couldn't get warm. It's cold here in Ontario right mm-hmm. now. And so 11:30, I was like, I know I've slept a bit, but I still feel like I've been awake. And so I just popped a half of one and slept like a babe the rest of the night. It was amazing. Loved it. Yeah, thank you for that.
Are there any non-prescription recommendations that, you know, recommend to people in our stage and phase?
A lot of people come to the pharmacy wanting to talk about supplements and what they're taking and what vitamins they should take, or even what natural products they're interested in taking or someone has recommended. And really, from the research, there is not a lot of supplements that are shown to do very much. So I always, everything in my viewpoint is a risk benefit. What's the risk of the medication? What's the benefit of the medication? And it's a balance or a scale. And that risk benefit scale changes for everybody. So the risk of taking vitamin D is very little risk. And there's actually lots of evidence to show we need vitamin D, especially because we live in Canada where we don't get a lot of sunlight. And in the summer, we're all covered in sunscreen, so we don't get a lot of sunlight. So we need vitamin D. There's good evidence for that. B12, as you get older, your body just does not absorb B12 from your food as well as it did when you were younger. So that is another vitamin that there's some proof you need some B12. B12 is good for your blood. It's good for your brain. You just need a set amount of B12. So it's easy to take B12. After that, there is not a lot of supplements that show that they actually do anything.
Okay, yep. Fair.
And natural health products are not examined by anyone. Anyone can sell a natural health product. There is no one monitoring this. There is no one regulating it. There is no one testing what is in this. So to me, the benefit is very small of these things and the risk is big. So I can't even think of a supplement I would recommend that's a natural health product for anyone. And especially
not even calcium or omega.
Well, no, calcium is for bone health.
Oh, sorry, magnesium.
Magnesium is not a supplement. Magnesium is a mineral that we need, right?
Okay,
I don't see it as like turmeric or St. John's wort or sort of these sort of natural products like that. Magnesium is used for very specific things. If it can help with some anxiety, it can help you go to sleep. It can also help if you have some constipation.
I was going to say go to the bathroom in the morning.
That's right. And it can help with muscle cramps. So if you have those specific things, again, the risk of taking magnesium is very low and the benefit might be great.
Okay.
You have to try it and see. I also am a big believer that you try these like magnesium, say you have muscle cramps. You try the magnesium, you do it for 8 weeks. If you notice no difference, you stop taking it. It's not something you add on and just keep taking. You actually have to decide, is this doing what it's supposed to be doing?
Yeah. So good to determine. There should be a need.
And that's right.
Would you even go so far as to say for vitamin D and B12, you should you check your blood levels, or is that necessary?
You can check your vitamin D blood levels in Ontario, but there's a cost to it. I think it's about $60. So most people won't do it. And most people have vitamin D levels that aren't clinically too low, right? They're going to come back within the normal range. But there's no harm in taking extra vitamin D, making sure you get enough.
Yep. Maybe just not the crazy high. Like some vitamin D supplements mm-hmm. I've seen are like crazy amounts.
Those are for people who've had their vitamin D tested and they are deficient in vitamin D. And we need to get their vitamin D up.
Right.
If you're just an average person, you probably don't have low vitamin D. You just need to take, 2,000 units a day. It gives you enough vitamin D. Make sure there's enough there for your body.
Yeah. Good. Thank you.
And vitamin B12 does get measured, but mostly when you're older. And you can have that measured. Again, people usually fall within a normal range, but if you want to make sure you have enough, you just take a supplement. And again, the risk is so, there is no risk and there is a benefit of both those vitamins and the calcium and the magnesium and the iron. Iron's a really big one. That you should not be taking iron unless you've had blood work done. That's a different one. You need to have your iron levels measured before you take iron. Iron has a lot of side effects and you shouldn't just be taking it because you think you need iron.
Fair.
It needs to be monitored.
That's really, really helpful. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you and I met each other years ago when our kids were little, but we reconnected at a menopause event in town. And it's because you had started a new company called Sugar Tracking Consulting. And so you are still a pharmacist and you're still working in the community. But additionally, you've got this company where you're specializing in metabolic health. And I thought that might be interesting to talk a little bit about metabolic health and why is it important for women in midlife and all of those great things. So yeah, tell us a little bit about metabolic health.
I guess metabolic health is the process of how your body uses its energy that it takes and fuels its body. And what happens is it's responsible for your blood sugar levels, it's responsible for your cholesterol levels, it's responsible for your blood pressure, and it's usually responsible for your waist circumference, which is all, you know, the middle bellies we get at
everyone's ears just perked up.
Exactly.
Listening.
My business is mostly focusing on your blood sugar, but again, if we focus on your blood sugar, we actually focus on your waist circumference, your cholesterol, and your blood pressure. So at middle age, you lose your estrogen when you go into menopause, and it makes you a little bit more insulin resistant. So what's insulin resistance? Insulin is the hormone that our body uses to move sugar from our bloodstream into our body's cells. And this is a natural process. This is what's supposed to happen. As we age and due to lifestyle and diet factors, your body stops listening to the insulin as well as it used to. So it means that you need more insulin to be able to move that sugar. And that sugar has to be moved from your bloodstream into your cells because your body only likes to have its blood sugar at a certain level.
Okay.
And so you need more and more insulin. Problem with insulin is even though it does its job of giving energy to our cells, it is a growth factor and it will push sugar into your cells. And if there's extra sugar, your cells can only take up so much sugar. So it can only use so much sugar to burn as fuel. It needs to do something with this extra sugar that insulin's putting in there, and it converts it to fat and it gets stored as fat for future use. The issue is if you always have insulin present, which you will if you have insulin resistance because your body's pushing out more and more insulin, your body will never go to that fat and use that fat that it's stored up for later use. It's only going to use sugar as fuel and it'll never burn off that fat. And in fact, more fat gets laid down and it becomes this cycle.
Why in the stomach?
So when you have estrogen present, your body, when it's laying down fat, will put it in places like your hips and your thighs. When you lose your estrogen, it starts to move it to your tummy and gets laid down in your abdomen and around your organs. And this is the next level of sort of explaining what happens is that fat gets laid down around your liver and your pancreas, which are responsible for your blood sugar and maintaining it at a certain level. It's called visceral fat. And that's where we get that little lovely postmenopausal belly that we cannot get rid of.
Yeah, fair. Yes. And I believe that the circumference, like the has something to do with pre-diabetic. Like, what's the
connection
there?
That's right. So those are markers. Like, so the bigger your waist circumference, and that's a marker that maybe your blood sugar, you're not metabolizing your blood sugar as effectively as you should, which will then lead to pre-diabetes. So diabetes is when your body can no longer keep your blood sugar at a certain level. So we have to give medication in order to get that level down.
Okay.
That's sort of the definition of diabetes. All of a sudden, it just can't return it to what we'd consider normal blood sugar. So there's a few steps before that, one being insulin resistance and one being pre-diabetes, which a lot of people will pre-diabetes before, and then you move on to diabetes. So it's sort of like a range. You start here at insulin resistance, and insulin resistance takes decades to develop. Like, it's choices we've made through our whole life. So it is that the menopause is happening and the estrogen affects it, but it's also just the time frame. Insulin resistance takes 20 years and all of a sudden now you're 50. Well, these things are converging at the same time, right?
Yeah. Fair.
So.
Can I just clarify pre-diabetes? What does that mean exactly?
So Prediabetes means so we would measure like a blood test. So what is your hemoglobin A1C, which is sort of the blood test we use to diagnose diabetes and prediabetes. And if you hit a certain number, that's considered prediabetes. That means that you are no longer having optimal or effective blood glucose metabolism. Your body's got too much sugar floating around.
And the markers that you talked about, is that used in conjunction with your blood work to make the diagnosis? Or are they things that show
They're
up?
They're not. We make the diagnosis. Okay. We make the diagnosis on a blood test. And, you know, you can always have the person who doesn't have a big waist circumference and has prediabetes or doesn't have blood pressure, but they are correlated. Usually if you have this, they are correlated.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. And so 50% of people who have prediabetes will move on to have diabetes. Diabetes is a huge health issue. There is a lot of morbidity and mortality associated with diabetes. But, you know, we could talk about diabetes. That's a whole other conversation.
That's a whole other conversation.
It really is scary.
It is scary. And you should be scared if you have diabetes. You should be really like nervous because bad things can happen if you don't take care of it. And it could be that you have very slow progressing diabetes. We used to say, like when I first was a pharmacist, that, you know, diabetes is a progressive disease. The only thing you can control is the speed at which it progresses. Your lifestyle choices and taking your medicine and your exercise and your diet will all slow that down. There's sort of been a shift, and I'm a big believer that this diabetes can actually be reversed or put into remission with some targeted changes. This is possible. It is no longer considered progressive disease if you make changes.
And what are some of those changes?
So that's where we come into the business I've started.
One question, is there a differentiation when we're talking about turning things around between type 1 and type 2?
Yes.
Okay.
Type 1 diabetes is not applicable to type 1 diabetes. Type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease where your pancreas no longer works and no longer produces insulin. You have to provide it with insulin. Type 2 diabetes, people do not start on insulin when they get first diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. Again, it's a progressive thing. We have about 4 or 5 different medicines you were put on before you were put on insulin. Insulin may be your 5th drug. Even when you're put on insulin as a type 2 diabetic, we don't stop the other drugs. It's just another drug to add to try to keep it in control. So there's one thing of diabetes. If you're someone doesn't like take medicine, you don't want to get diabetes because you're going to be on a lot of medication. Mm. And 6 million people have prediabetes in Canada. Wow. And if 50% of them are going to go on to develop diabetes, this is a big health thing in our specialized medicine that we pay for people.
That's a heavy burden.
It's a heavy burden.
So what are some of the things we can be doing?
So what we want to do is we need to improve your insulin sensitivity. That's what we need to do. If you improve your insulin sensitivity, then your insulin works better. The sugar all moves in the way it's supposed to work. You sometimes can burn off some of that extra fat that you have there because you don't have insulin around all the time. Mm-hmm. So some of the things you do is mostly your food choices is the big one. There's like 4 caveats of everything of feeling better, which is food, exercise, sleep, and stress. You have to work on those things all affect your insulin sensitivity. Most of it is food, and it's trying to teach people who already have a predisposition for, like if they have insulin resistance or prediabetes or they have some of these markers, like a large waist circumference and increased blood pressure and high cholesterol, that they now are people who maybe should not be eating as many carbohydrates as they are used to eating. So this is not for everyone. This is for people who fall into those categories of going down the road of approaching prediabetes or diabetes. And if you have any of those conditions, then you're there. Like if someone's told you have prediabetes, you're already there. Your body doesn't need so many carbohydrates. That would be the big one. Really limiting rice and potatoes and bread, all those white carbohydrates. But there's lots of other things. I mean, we believe in our business that one of the things is to learn how to stabilize your blood sugar so that you don't have these really, you know, high blood sugars and then come back down and then go back up and then go back down. Because that, again, causes every time your blood sugar goes up, a big bolus of insulin gets released by your body. That's what it's supposed to do. And you just have more exposure to insulin. Get a good night's sleep. That helps. The sleep helps, makes you more insulin sensitive to that insulin working. Exercise, building muscles. Muscles are sugar sinks, I like to say. So the more actual muscle cells you have, you can pull in more sugar. And that makes you more insulin sensitive because your body doesn't have so much sugar to have to deal with. It has somewhere to put it.
Yeah. It's interesting because as part of the Sugar Track Consulting, yeah. you wear a CGM, a continuous glucose monitor. Mm-hmm. And so I won a package at this event, and I got to wear one of those for 2 weeks and consult with you, which is really, really fascinating for me because, as you know, but maybe our listeners don't, in 2020, around COVID, I was addicted to like learning all about this stuff. So I was wearing one and I was spiking and plateauing up at the high, and it would take me forever to drop, and it was all over the map. And then I started doing Gina Livy, which is all those things you just talked about: eating healthy, nutritious whole foods, sleeping, prioritizing your sleep, prioritizing movement. Like it's all of those aspects. It's very like lifestyle. And when we did the CGM again, 5 years later, I guess, I did spike, like, you know, depending on what I was eating, but I had really stabilized. And I will also tell you, I went from belly, like, and I still have a bit of a belly, but because I don't work out enough. But
you don't do the muscle part.
I need to do that. Like, I really want to do it. And anyway, Mikkel is like an ace at this right now. Anyway, I need. But It did really change my insulin sensitivity, yeah. I guess I would say. Is that correct?
It did. Yeah. So that you have very stable blood sugar. Like you had, if I could share this, like when you ate something, your blood sugar went up. Your blood sugar is supposed to go up when you eat, but it never like skyrocketed and went crazy high. Your insulin gets released and it came back down very quickly. And you just didn't have a lot of variability in your day of how of your blood sugars going up and down.
Except for at night when I woke up.
So at night, what we found in our program is a number of women, we're watching them we put a CGM on, which is a monitor we put in your arm that measures your blood glucose in real time. So you can see it. And we can see that during the night, their sugars were dropping mm-hmm. to what we consider low, and they're waking up.
Yes.
And so I've had a number of women, we've said, why don't you have a little bit of carbohydrate with some protein snacks? Some crackers and cheese or peanut butter and apple or something right before bed, and their blood sugar is not dropping too low and they're sleeping
better. Yeah, that was
fascinating.
No.
I had a lady, like, this is really common too. Like, she wakes up and she thinks, oh, it's because I have to go to the bathroom, right? We all get it. She gets up, goes to the bathroom, lies back down, can't get back to sleep. And then maybe she does get back to sleep and it happens again. Got to go to the bathroom again because we're all drinking like 3 liters of water, whatever people are drinking because, you know. But what happened with her, the minute we added the snack, she wasn't waking up to go to the bathroom. It was actually that her blood sugar may have been waking her up. Then you're awake. You're like, oh,
because your cortisol, when your blood sugar drops, your cortisol spikes so you don't die, right? Is that right?
I guess, yeah.
Something like that. But no, this, because you said this to me. And so I was like, wait. So I would start tapping, like I would wake up then and I could see, but this way I could know that, okay, yeah, I tapped at that time I was awake. Yeah. And sure enough, I would drop and then I would be awake. And
I thought it was just fascinating. You think it's because you have to go to the bathroom while you're waking up. But actually for this woman, it was that she was waking up and then having to go to the bathroom because you're awake.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting.
So who are your, sorry, I cut you off.
Jennifer. No, that's okay.
Go ahead. I'm just going to ask, who are the target clients for Sugar Track Consulting?
What I think that our Sugar Track Consulting is that there is so much information out there. Like you hear me say, oh, you may have prediabetes. This is what you should do. Don't eat bread. I mean, that is actually not useful. Or you can go on social media or go on websites or go try to educate yourself. And it is just like, where do you even start? If you're someone like me, you read all that and you just, oh, I'm going to go lie down. I'm going to go turn on Netflix. I don't even know where to start.
Right? I can't. Yeah.
Like, where do you start with this? So what I see our program being, it's just a 14-day program. We put a CGM, which is a continuous glucose monitor, on you that tracks your sugar in real time. And it's a gateway, I like to say, or a starting point, or it's somewhere to start that is not overwhelming. You're going to have a pharmacist lead you through this program. It's self-directed, but we give some suggestions. So it's not like this isn't hard. It's really simple. It's a virtual appointment. It's for anyone. We walk you through putting on a CGM. We talk to you about insulin and sugar. And at the end of the 14 days, we go over some of the things we saw. You track your food. We can see what you're eating. We can see what you're sleeping. We'll say, look it. You really, really start your morning with a breakfast that maybe is not doing you any favors. Your sugar goes really high. I know you love your oatmeal covered in maple syrup with, and I know you're putting some nuts on it because that's healthy, but really look at this. Your blood sugar is going to 9 or 10 and then it comes back down, but all day long it just creeps up. after 14 days, we're not going to solve all your problems. But what we're going to do is be able to give you personalized, directed suggestions that can help for you, because everyone's different. Mm-hmm. We may have someone who, again, like the sleeping thing, while their sugars ended up being just fine, they don't have prediabetes, but now we've helped them sleep. I have people who have prediabetes that do this, and they take the suggestion I give them. And because they're so specific to them, because we've watched them for 14 days, they make those changes that really, this is the caveat, none of these changes are huge changes. Some of them are just because they're much more directed towards you. Yep. Like, stop having a muffin as a snack in the middle of the day. Your Tim Hortons and your muffin is what's killing you here. Your meals look great. It's these snacks you're choosing to have.
And, simple, you know, little tweaks, yeah.
That's right. And we've had a number of people who've gone from having, would be diagnosed with prediabetes and on their next blood work, just doing the things and keeping it up, like doing, taking the suggestions, following it through for 12 weeks, they do not qualify as having prediabetes anymore. I've had a patient lose 30 pounds with that one 14 day, gave him some tweaks of what you need to do. And he's lost 30 pounds.
Yeah, because he's a man and it drops right
away. I know. So like even Suckers. If we translate into a woman, they might lose 15 pounds.
Right, fair. Some things, maybe.
So that's sort of where I see my business. There's lots of people out there like Gina Lively. And I mean, I can give you a million businesses like Dr. Joey Shulman, who's, you know, this Canadian nutritionist who does lots of programming, who can do the whole programs for you. The problem is, so you're on the internet, where do you start?
Yeah.
Where do you start? And how do you get something? This at least gives you real-time data so you can actually see what's happening to your blood sugar. And that will affect your metabolic health almost as much as anything else. Because when you can see it, you're like, oh my goodness, I don't want to eat that anymore. Or I'm going to eat a smaller portion. Or it just gives you information so that you can make better decisions. I think the real strength is getting someone to start. No one knows where to start. You got to make the first step. This is somewhat thing to do.
I think also it's guided by people with expertise, you
That's
are
right.
then making mm-hmm. recommendations that are specific to them to help That's them right. manage a health condition that could be
yeah,
very, very serious.
Yeah. And yeah. like as a pharmacist, I have, because I have this passion in sort of in diabetes remission or reverse or whatever you want to call it, I really believe that if everyone thought they could make a difference, they actually would make a difference. Mm-hmm. But they don't actually know. They just think, I just got to stay in the medicine and try to not eat too much and exercise better and it'll all be okay. But it's just too vague. It's not personalized enough.
That sounds simple, but what you just described is not easy to do.
That's right. It's not. And there isn't a lot of good feedback. Like, so you do it, and then in 3 months or 6 months, you go for your blood work, and it's no better, or it's just the same. Like, there's no immediate feedback. Using a CGM is a tool that gives people immediate feedback, and our brains are wired. We get immediate feedback. We make better decisions.
Fair.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah. No, okay, caveat. We try to make better.
We try to make. When we know better, we do better. We try. Jen, what is the one thing you wish every woman knew about using a pharmacist as part of their perimenopause toolkit?
I think that really is that you just have to realize that your pharmacist is this untapped resource. They know a lot of stuff, and maybe they're not the specialized pharmacist. If you go to the like a special menopause clinic, there may be a pharmacist there who knows the ins and outs of every single study and every single drug. But your community pharmacist who you build a relationship with knows you. They know maybe your partner, they know your kids, and maybe they even know your parents. They know where you live, they know your community, they know your background, they know how you kind of eat. And so if everyone could go to their pharmacist and just ask some questions, or just say, tell me what you know about menopause, or tell me what you know about estrogen, tell me what you know about my bone health, tell me how I can feel better, and maybe even, what are the questions I should ask my doctor? I feel terrible. Am I in menopause? Am I not in menopause? We're just that resource you can go and see. And we know lots and lots of stuff, and people just need to build a relationship with their pharmacist so that they can have those conversations with them.
Thank you.
Amazing.
Great answer.
I hope I've done my job of convincing people why pharmacists are important.
That was
members.
Amazing. Yeah.
No, I'm in.
That you should go and find a pharmacist that you can have a relationship with.
Well, and yeah, I'm coming your way, Jen.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and write a review,
so more women can find us and get a better understanding of what to expect in perimenopause.
This information is not intended as medical advice. The intent of this information is to provide the listener with knowledge to support more efficient and effective communication with their medical.